Welcome to another episode of Tell Me More, a hospitality data podcast. I'm Stephanie Ricca with Hotel News Now, and as always, here with STR's Isaac Collazo and CoStar's Jan Freitag. Today, we're recording from the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference in Atlanta. Hi, guys.
Hey, Steph.
Hey, Steph. In person. This is so great.
I know. It's fun to record in person. Often we're on the other end of the phone or the technology or the screen, so now I can look into your eyes.
Fun fact. So someone told me this morning this hotel is either 49 or 50 years old. The Marriott Marquis Atlanta.
Why 49 or 50?
Because we hadn't checked the actual census data yet, so we need to check it. The guy thought it was 50, and I said, really? So...
And we are here for the 35th anniversary of the Hunter Hotel Investment Conference. So it's been around for a while. So
I was hoping that the 49 or 50 was some sort of quirky, you know, the records went up in flames. I don't know, but...
No, it's that Isaac hasn't checked census. That's all.
Well, we will find the answer to that and bring it to you by next month's podcast. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the vibe at the Hunter Conference a little later on. But I want to begin our first segment today with the latest CoStar STR hotel performance data. Isaac, give us some highlights of where we sit right now.
Yeah, I think the first highlight is that RevPAR grew by 2%. And that's the highest or largest RevPAR growth for the industry since November. And when you look at it, it was driven by ADR, which grew by 3.9%. And that's a extremely high versus what we'd seen previously of 2.7 and 2.1. What we're still seeing, which gives us some cause or for concern, would be demand continues to go down. It went down 1.2%, and it's been going down 1.2% for the last 3 months. So that is concerning to me. But again, it seemed like, again, a decent month for the industry, given the first, you know, February.
What's the time frame of that? Is that all of February, March so far?
This is all of February.
This is all of February.
Yeah, this is the full month of February.
Okay, so 2% growth for full month of February. Jan, any thoughts on what that sounds like to you?
Yeah, well, the data point that I find interesting is that the occupancy for luxury, upper upscale, and upscale chains was 66% for all of them, 66 point something for all of them. So we're selling 2 out of 3 rooms on the high end. That's obviously where the highest ADRs are. So I think that speaks to this conviction in group travel and in corporate transient coming back slowly but surely.
It's almost like there's a bifurcation right in the industry. So we're seeing the higher ends do better, and at the lower ends is where we're seeing the leakage in demand and the lower performance overall.
Talk a little bit more about that bifurcation, Isaac. And I think you've chosen Isaac's top hot topic of the episode. How are you seeing it? Where are you seeing it?
You know, it continues to be in that lower tier, specifically, obviously, economy. We've been talking about economy for the last 6 or 7 months, and it has been down. Demand in the economy has been down 23 of the last 24 months, and essentially 22 consecutive months, if you look at that. So the other thing I noticed this time around was demand in upper mid-scale fell, and it's been down 3 consecutive months. So we are seeing something that is, there is some kind of bifurcation happening where the low end, most likely it's being economically driven, that upper middle class to lower middle class individuals are being priced out, not because of hotel rates, but being priced out because everything in life has cost more. And we're also, one of the things we, in a presentation I just recently did, we looked at delinquency rates for credit cards. They're rising and debt rates are rising. So I think there is, you know, I've been on the last of the bandwagon to get on this. It's economically driven. Now I'm thinking, okay, yes, there are some other aspects that are driving economy hotels down, including closures. But now I'm thinking, yes, people are feeling the pinch of higher inflation rates, higher interest rates, and the high cost of everything overall.
It takes a while for some of those sort of spending trends or lack thereof to show up in the data, to filter, to trickle into other industries like travel. So it's interesting that you're seeing that now. Jan, do you agree, disagree?
Yeah, I think I would take the other side of that and say, look at the high end, you know, look at people being on the road, Hunter Hotel Investment Conference, strongest ever. And when I look around, you know, fly into the Atlanta airport, super busy. We'll talk later about the CEO for Delta having some interesting comments about the high end. So I think there is, yes, maybe some room for concern or some reason for concern on the lower end. But I think when I look at upper upscale luxury type properties, they seem to be just firing on all cylinders. And despite the fact that we're saying, oh, how much, you know, more spending power is there for the American leisure consumer? It sounds like that the American leisure consumer is saying, you know, if I'm in a household income of over $100,000 or so, I feel pretty good about myself.
Yeah, but the only thing that concerns me, Jan, right now, again, is that upper mid-scale, because that is our largest segment, right? So, and now I'm seeing it get hit as well. And so that's why I started getting concerned when I saw that. And again, I actually looked back a little further in the data series, and it's been down 4 out of the last 5 months. So something, again, there seems to be a pinch happening on the consumer side. Yes, I completely agree with you. The luxury side, the upper upscale side, nope, no issues. They're growing, continue to grow. But this is concerning to me because, again, it's the largest segment within the industry. So that's why I'm a little bit concerned.
And so the question then is this just the Q1 softness that, to be fair, we predicted? The STR CoStar forecast was very clear that Q1 of 2024 would be softer. Rachel from CBRE was just on stage saying basically the same thing. So I think we all agree. So I hope that this is not that people don't perceive this as a false negative, if you want to use that word, and talk themselves into a longer term downturn that may not happen because our RevPAR forecast is still for 4.1% growth for 2024.
Yeah, and again, I don't disagree with you. We did build this into the forecast, but I am seeing weaker performance in the last 2 months than what I had forecasted, right? So that's what's, it's like, it is weaker, and it's weaker on that lower end side.
So the bifurcation, like you mentioned, as sort of the Isaac Hot Topic of the month, bifurcation and really being able to see it play out in the numbers, what we may have talked about and forecast, but seeing it play out.
And everything we've looked at, you know, I've been I've been vocal about, yes, that the traveling public is not the general economy in public, right? And so, yeah, we are still seeing positive signs of the number of households with 100,000 plus going up. We still have forecasts for personal disposable income going up. And in fact, real personal disposable income actually was higher than the rate of inflation since the end of last year. So everything says, hey, they should be doing much better. They should be, you know, there should be more demand. But we're seeing, again, this little, it's not a lot of demand loss, but it's a demand loss. And, you know, you got to start paying attention going, if you're starting to lose it in that upper middle scale segment, it's like, hey, we got to at least take note. It may be nothing. It may go away, but we should at least be cognizant of it.
And hey, that's why your listeners come to this podcast to unpack the data. Am I right?
That's right.
Jan, share with us your interesting topic of the episode.
So we have talked about Taylor Swift a lot, so I don't want to talk about Taylor
Swift. Wait, who? Taylor Swift?
But Jan's a Swifty.
We have to talk about Las Vegas. So yes, Isaac, of course, is correct. RevPAR for the month of February was up 2%. But, and this a little bit blew my mind, if you take out Las Vegas, the national RevPAR in February was down minus 1.4%. Yep. So Las Vegas is 3% of the national inventory. It's, you know, the largest hotel market. And they had a monster Super Bowl, right? The ADR on Super Bowl Sunday night was over $800 for the market, which is, these are numbers that, you know, we've never seen before. And so it had a huge impact on the national data. So it's going to be super interesting for us to, going forward, always look at the national data and then quickly look at how Las Vegas did to see if there was a swing. For the month of February, yes, absolutely, there was a swing to the positive. And the people who just look at the top line data would say, oh yeah, okay, so that's fine. So this is demand. Going back, tying this back to Isaac's point, clearly there is an income level or an experience seeking level of consumer who said, damn the torpedoes, full speed ahead. We are going to Vegas, even if we can't afford the ticket, but we're just here for the party. And it was just amazing to see those demand and room rate numbers that impacted the national numbers.
What was interesting is that, you know, it was all on the ADR side. So when you say you were looking at RevPAR, but I looked at the differentials between all the key KPIs, and there was a 310 basis points difference in US ADR without Vegas. And I thought that was really just amazing. It's like, wow, that's a huge differential, largest we've seen, because we track Vegas You know, we've been tracking it for some time. So, and but what I thought was even more interesting when you look at the market data without Vegas is that the industry overall only grew ADR by 0.8%. That to me is even more shocking than just separating Vegas going, holy heck, ADR without Vegas was only 0.8%. And the last several months, I'm looking at the data now, it was over 2%. And you go, what happened? And that's still some work we'll have to do since the February data just got here. We'll have to dig into why did we see that drop in ADR.
Let me ask you about Las Vegas. You mentioned, of course, you know, STR, CoStar have been tracking it for a while. And Super Bowl, or as Jan put it, I think you called it an Usher concert.
Where a football game broke out.
Where a football game happened and Taylor Swift showed up. What else can we think about on the calendar for Las Vegas moving forward? So where do you think we will see similar, like, oh, let's look at the data minus Vegas. Is it going to be just general return of big citywide events? I know that Formula One is coming back. That'll be later in the year. Another one that kind of points to that high-end demand. But anything else standing out?
What we've been seeing, especially, again, I saw the data for this week, and it's just all the shifts. So you're going to see lots of different movements in ADR and RevPAR for Vegas as conferences shift, just calendar shifts. So that's going to be an ongoing thing on a weekly basis, just numbers wildly going up and down because of these big conferences. So yes, to answer your question, it's about conferences. And it'll be interesting to see how it does this week with the March Madness beginning. So a lot of people do go to Vegas for the March Madness. So we'll see how that picks that data back up or big picks up performance, couldn't think of the words.
But it's interesting for us from a data perspective. It's really good to have Vegas in it because prior to us reporting on Vegas, we had the top 25 markets, and if we saw a sharp swing in a group market, we were like, oh, where did these people go? Did it just evaporate? And now because we have the full picture, we could say, oh, right, if one market's down, some other market, i.e. Vegas, may be up, or vice versa. You know, what we saw in the prelim numbers for March, sorry, in last week's data for March, you know, that Las Vegas had a negative swing. So, you know, maybe that data, convention went somewhere else.
Yeah, it's good. It does help us look at it. It does provide a lot more noise than normal.
Right. So that's an interesting market to look at when you think about that actualization of the return of big group and big box hotel performance. So you both chose the topic of the month. My topic of the episode that I want to chat about is just the general vibe of this Hunter Hotel Investment Conference. You know, when we recorded the January episode, we were live at the Alice Conference in Los Angeles. And what always strikes me about this Hunter Conference in particular is it has, you know, gained a little bit of notoriety because, of course, 4 years ago, this was the first major hotel industry event that was canceled right when the early days of the pandemic lockdown happened. So we kind of look at time as it progresses from mid-March, the time of the Hunter Conference. And what strikes me this year is we're 4 years out and I hear people talking, you know, it's sort of the more things change, the more things stay the same, right? But then I've found a couple kind of trends that I think changed as a result of the pandemic that I look back on. So day of week, right? Like Thursday through Sunday, people still continuing to expand that length of stay and travel. And then, of course, the whole idea of multi-purpose travel, which is the new term that I've heard from leisure travel, it's simply not going away. I guess I would have thought 4 years ago that might have just been a little bit of we'll get it out of our systems and go. What's your vibe from the conference, Jan? Start with you.
So, best attended ever. And what was the number? 20% of attendees, 15% of attendees are first-timers?
First time, there's a lot, right?
So a lot of first-timers, a lot of, I hate to say this, people much younger than me. So it's great to see the next generation, you know, coming here to make deals. I think it is overall a fairly active conference. Everybody's talking to everybody, saying, what are you seeing? Is there something? Can you get something done? There seems to be CMBS in the market being securitized, so that's certainly a good indicator for activity. When I talk to brokers, they're saying, yep, we're talking to everybody. Everybody talks to us. We still don't see a lot of distress. But I think Mitch Shaw from Noble said it yesterday that they're dabbling in CMBS debt. So my sort of shorthand headline for this is everybody's a banker. Suddenly all these funds that are just out here to develop, that used to be out here to develop or to make deals to buy or sell hotels, suddenly they're like, hey, if I can loan money at the shorthand is SOFR over 1,000 or SOFR over 800. I get very, very high interest rates, call it 14, 15, 16%. Why would I not? Because the risk obviously is a lot different, a lot smaller than having them to provide equity. So that I think is really interesting and overall quite positive. And we'll talk about Ed Bastian here in a second. I think that was also, I thought, a super interesting presentation from the CEO of Delta.
My sense is no one's overly concerned. Right. So even though we showed this data yesterday, we showed it again today, no one, in terms of some of the demand declines, no one seems overly concerned. And that's good. But again, and everyone seems to have reasons to believe why demand, especially in the economy and mid-scale, is down. So overall, I found the vibe talking to people yesterday, again, very positive. I didn't feel any negativity. I didn't get that sense of concern that, oh, my God, we're about to everything's changing again. That's what I'm hearing and seeing. And again, I agree with everything else that Jan said. So again, positive.
Give us the high points from Ed Bastian's speech, CEO of Delta. We're here in Atlanta. Delta's based here. Business travel hub, business travel behemoth when it comes to airlines and airlift all over the world.
First of all, massive respect for taking a company that in February of 2020 had 100,000 people to 4 months later had 30,000 people. It was just sort of scary to relive that moment, and he obviously managed the company through it. He said that Delta was leading in the airline industry, and so they had the furthest to fall, and fall they did, but they're coming back roaring. So the premiumization of air travel is very much on his mind. The new airplanes that he's buying have now 25 to 30% of premium seats, whereas pre-2019 it was 15%. So they're leaning fully into first class, Delta One, Comfort Plus, and all the other bifurcation of not economy. I think that is super interesting. And he's saying that 50% of our revenues are now generated not just from seat sales, but from all the other ancillary sales. So very, very interesting and very, very, I think, positive news. If you are on the hotel side, a owner, operator, who caters towards the people who fly towards the front of the plane.
And it's interesting because he was one who throughout pandemic and especially, you know, coming out of the recovery the last 2 years has said consistently on earnings calls, if I had more premium seats, I could sell them twice over. And I can't help but make that comparison to hotel conversations where hoteliers say, if I had more suites, if I had more adjoining rooms, premium rooms, I could sell them two times over.
Most definitely. I did. The other thing I thought he said that makes a lot of sense, and he actually said, voiced it in a different way during the pandemic, was that, again, at the point of the pandemic, said the era of flying 6 hours for dinner is over. And he made that point again. Today, he said it totally different. He goes, it's just stupid to go to London for a day. You know, and so I thought that makes sense. It's like people are not doing it because it is stupid. And it's hard on your body. And I also think another, again, he is there as an organization are really leaning into the premium space. But it makes sense because everything I'm looking at from an economic sense is, you know, households with 100,000 plus income are more confident. They have the funds. And in fact, if you looked at the savings, remember we all were talking about excess savings, right, during the pandemic? It was mostly in the hands of the top 20%. And even though it's come down, they still have the means to travel. And I think that's, again, going back to my word bifurcation, I think that's why we're seeing that premium seats, premium hotels, premium destinations.
Length of stay, yeah, length of trip.
They continue to grow.
Funny how all these travel industries just work together,
right.
Isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's just because the individuals that are predisposed to travel and have the means to travel are going to travel, and they're going to do that blended travel. They're going to do everything we're seeing. But again, we just got to keep an eye on the other end of the spectrum just to make certain that, because we have a lot of hoteliers that are on that side as well. So
right, but really interesting shift seeing 4 years later.
Four, so, yep.
So if room demand, so if airline demand or room demand is not really that big of a question, how did Ian become the carrier of choice? And his answer to that is clearly, hey, we are profit sharing. And they give it out on Valentine's Day, which I thought was interesting. Yeah. So on Valentine's Day this year, they spent $1.4 billion with the B dollars in profit share with their staff, with everybody. And the person who was interviewing him, who may have been a little bit catering to the crowd, but he's saying, oh, when I fly Delta, I feel people are pretty happy. But I think there's a relationship there, you know, of taking care of your people who take care of your customers, which then takes care of revenues.
Okay. You, did you not pay attention in Cornell school? Come on. There's a, it starts with an M. What, who said that? Who said, take care of your associates? I think that was Mr. Marriott, right? Spirit
absolutely.
To serve. I think Delta just took a playbook out of Marriott's playbook. And again, they're both almost, well, Delta's going to be 100 years old. Marriott's going to be 97, 98. They're both almost the same age. So I think they both agree that if you take care of your employees, they will serve and take care of your guests. And so,
and but from that 50,000 foot view, which, okay, airline, that sort of employee care relating to guest care has really not been a hallmark of the airline industry at all. So I think it's great to see give and take back and forth between learnings from these related industries.
And I think it's because too many, again, we understand that they're there for your safety. But sometimes
That's the first line in there.
Right. Some airlines take that meaning we're not here to serve you at all. We're only here for your safety. Well, I think
you'll live, but you can't have a drink of water.
Exactly. But I think Delta, and I do agree. I mean, I fly, being a hometown boy too, I fly Delta all the time. And I just find it. And now that I'm in Nashville, I don't get to fly Delta as much. And I miss Delta because it is just different. They are different.
Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast segment was not brought to you by Delta Airlines.
But if you want to be a sponsor, please call Stephanie.
Please contact us. Now, guys, I want to bring a new feature into the podcast starting this episode. And in closing, I would like you to each give me a fun metaphor about industry performance. You know, I would say as an example, in the past, maybe we talked about weather references or baseball games. I want your mind to run wild. Give me a fun metaphor. Simile, metaphor, your choice. The hotel industry now is like, Jan, start us off.
So we were just on spring break in Costa Rica, and we were staying near a volcano that isn't active anymore, but the Springs Resort has, I think, 12 different hot springs from 98 degrees to 104 degrees. And so, to me, the industry is a little bit like those hot springs. They are starting to bubble, and they're starting to be, we're seeing a lot of activity, and things are heating up.
And people are dipping their toes in, dare I say?
Nice.
Isaac, what's your simile metaphor comparison?
Mine is smooth jazz. Okay, so I mean,
I like how you downloaded into your smooth jazz voice.
Welcome to Smooth Jazz with Stephanie Ricca and Isaac Colazzo. I think it's because it's what I like about jazz. It varies a lot, right? So you go from some high energy tempo, but when you're in smooth jazz, it's not too high energy, but it's not too low either. It's mellow. And given what we're seeing with this bifurcation, this differences in the two sides, the haves and have nots, I kind of think of it as smooth jazz, that it's smooth and it's comforting right now overall, but it could get a little dicey and exotic.
You might hit some exotic riffs.
Exactly.
As always, thank you both for your insight, and thank you to our listeners. Remember to find the latest global hotel industry news on hotelnewsnow.com. Find this podcast wherever you like to listen, and give these guys both follows on LinkedIn. See you next time.
See you next time.
I'm Devon Reed.
I'm Omari Head.
And I'm Chris Henry.
We're the hosts of the Next Gen in Lodging podcast on the Hotel News Now podcast network. It's a monthly show in which we interview a new generation of hoteliers to get their insights into a variety of disciplines and topics, from finance to food and beverage and hotel operations. Listen to us on Spotify, Google, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thank you for listening to Tell Me More, a hospitality data podcast. This episode was recorded on March 20th, 2024, and edited by Sean McCracken. Go to hotelnewsnow.com for the latest industry news every day.